The 23rd episode of Almar, the official podcast of the Brazilian Institute for the Law of the Sea, is starting. My name is Lili Lima. I am a law student at the Dom Helder Câmara Superior School and a geography student at the Federal University of Minas Gerais. And today I will present the podcast and talk about ocean science diplomacy with the guest André Polejac. He is a PhD candidate in the Land-to-Ocean Leadership Program of the Sasakawa Global Ocean Institute of the World's Maritime University in Sweden, former General Coordinator for Oceans, Antarctica and Geosciences of the Brazilian Ministry of Science, Technology, Innovation and Communications. Biologist as background with a master's in ecology, he has been working with marine and Antarctic sciences for almost 2 decades and is now researching science diplomacy in the Atlantic Ocean with linkages to the UN Decade of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development. Finally, alumni of the UN Nippon Foundation of Japan Fellowship on the issue of science policy interface in the ocean decision-making process, having worked in the Division of Ocean Affairs and Law of the Sea, and acted as the global alumni representative of the fellowship, coordinating alumni activities among more than 50 countries. Welcome, Mr. Polejac. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much, and thank you for having me today.
Thank you for your participation in the 23rd episode of the podcast, Almar. It's an honor to have you with us. Let's start by talking about your interest in ocean science diplomacy. How and when did it start? And how have you been working with this subject?
Oh, nice. Thanks for the question. So I used to be a bureaucrat. I used to work for the Ministry of Science, Technology and Innovation in Brazil, which I'm still an employee of. And I started listening in different international negotiations. I started listening to this new term, a science diplomacy, that I wasn't very sure on what it meant. And as time passed by, I started seeing that this was becoming more and more common into international conversations with colleagues, especially when dealing with international cooperation, scientific cooperation in marine sciences. So I asked around and nobody had a single answer, and things were kind of different from whoever you talk to. And at the end of the day, I decided that I wasn't getting any younger and I needed some time off to get myself back to academia and really dig deep into the concepts of science diplomacy and see how it would fit into the ocean governance framework that we have today. And that's when I decided then to do this PhD at the World Maritime University in Sweden here. And it was a beautiful opportunity that just came by in the same time that I was having these intriguing questionings in my head. So that's it. I decided to take this journey. I took a work leave and decided then to study ocean science diplomacy.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing your experience with the Almar audience. And each guest has a perspective on the law of the sea and the ocean itself. You're a biologist and you've been researching and working with ocean science diplomacy, which makes your perspective even more interesting. Since I asked this question for all those interviewed, I must ask you, for you, what is law of the sea? What does the ocean mean to you?
Well, that's a tricky one, huh? Those are actually two questions, because the ocean has different meanings for me. I am a biologist, but I am a land biologist, or I used to be a land biologist. So I used to work with the Cerrado, the Brazilian savanna biome, and that was my life, because I was raised and educated in Brasilia. But the first time that I got into the public service, that I worked for the CNPq, our National Science Foundation, my first day there, I started working with the Antarctic program, and with that, with ocean sciences as well. And it happens to all of us. It's like a mosquito bite. You just get infected by it and can't leave anymore. So it's so intriguing and so complicated and so passionate at the same time. So the ocean became the central thing of my life. Of course, I do have a lot of individual emotional connectedness to the ocean, but I mean, in professional ways, the ocean has been shaping my career for the past 20 years. But then what is the law of the sea for me? It's a complete mess, because the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, it's a very intriguing and complex system that was negotiated over a long time. And many commitments and compromises were done so we could have the convention in itself. So Law of the Sea, for me, it's extremely transdisciplinary, because it does link beautifully to science, to research from hard and social sciences, to international relations, to social phenomena from social studies. And it is, of course, a legal instrument. So it has all the legal scholarship around it. So this confusion, this complexity of many fields coming together, for me, it's the law of the sea. I know I'm supposed to say that law of the sea is the discipline that states the rights and obligation of state members of the UN Convention of the Law of the Sea. But, you know, I think that it's much more than that. I think the law of the sea, it's actually where multiple stakeholders meet and have to decide upon things that many times they have not a clue on what they are deciding about. There's so much uncertainty for us to navigate in that. So that's the beauty of it. That's law of the sea for me. And it's dependent on science. And I love to say that to lawyers.
Very, very interesting perspective. Thank you so much for sharing with us. So, let's start talking about ocean science diplomacy more specifically. First, I need to ask to clarify for our listeners, what is ocean science diplomacy, and what does it mean for the ocean governance?
If you allow me, I'll take one step back, because there is no clear definition of what science diplomacy is. But scholarship up to today classifies science diplomacy as all the interrelationships between research and international relations. So that means some efforts were done to try to classify it. So you have a taxonomy that says that science diplomacy would encompass every time that science gives information for diplomatic decision-making. That's one form of science diplomacy. Another one would be that countries would come together in research projects, even though they are conflicting in other areas. So a good example of that is the scientific cooperation in the Middle East. And the third aspect of it is when diplomacy is so eager to have answers from science that it actually raises investment and find ways to fund and to promote and foster science further. So those would be like the classic, I don't know if I can say classic, but the three types, taxonomies of science diplomacy. But at the end of the day, it is how research, scientific evidence, the scientific result can feed up international processes, even by fostering a country's foreign policy, for instance. So one good example of that is it's called soft power, science acting as a soft power, because it actually attracts and seduces other countries to your own national values and beliefs. So by doing that, you attract more investment, and you attract the beautiful, the big minds around the world to studying in your institutions to become part of your science and technology system. So it's still very confusing on what science diplomacy exactly is, but it encompasses all of those aspects that I just said. So it was a surprise for me that nobody has did like a taxonomy for how science diplomacy would be important for the ocean. And there were some papers that were relating especially to the newly implementing agreement that is being negotiated under the Convention of the Law of the Sea, the BBMJ, the Biodiversity Beyond National Jurisdiction. So there's a lot about that. There's a lot about the Antarctic Treaty, as well as how science was actually shaping those treaties, but there wasn't in-depth analysis of how the Convention on the Law of the Sea was impacted by science. So I found this researcher from the UK called Sam Robinson, and he had this very intriguing view on how the lack of technical capacities in the global south were actually responsible for us to have today the provisions in the convention about the area, right? The seabed soils absorb out of national jurisdictions. And from that start, I decided then to dig into it and analyze how the convention was actually framed around ocean science and what we had as scientific discovery and an evidence back in the 70s and 80s. And a lot was done in that regard. So until today, many of the decisions that we have to take under international negotiations to promote and implement the Convention of the Law of the Sea are actually based on science, and that's irrefutable. In that regard, that is a process that can be called the ocean science diplomacy. So I published a paper about that in Frontiers in Marine Science with a lot of examples, but also analyzing how fundamental, how critical ocean science diplomacy is to ocean governance, to global ocean governance.
In this sense, what is the relation between the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea and ocean science diplomacy? It seems like an obvious question, but we are not always able to clarify the importance of other areas of knowledge for the law of the sea. That is, the way in which it is built, mainly by the collaboration of an entire scientific network not offered by the international law itself. So how is ocean science diplomacy connected to the law of the sea?
Well, there are many aspects of how science diplomacy and law of the sea are connected, actually. Because if you look at it, at the convention in itself, let's take one very important thing that we are dealing now, which is seabed mining, right? There's a lot of uncertainty, scientific uncertainties. We don't know much on what would happen if we started mining the seafloor. In that regard, science is also tied up because it doesn't have all the equipment necessary or the funding necessary to elucidate all the problems that may be rise from the deep seabed mining. So in that regard, you need to have joint work between diplomats, lawyers, legal scholarship, and scientists in more broader sense to try to understand how impactful that would be to the marine environment, the seabed mining would be to the marine environment, would be to profit and the share of benefits, to equity, which is one of the main goals, I would say, from the convention, or at least it's supposed to be, and how we could be making the implementation of certain provisions of the convention that are not yet fully implemented, such as the transfer of marine technology, for instance. So not only a handful of states can actually do deep sea research or even deep sea mining, which is not something that we are actually doing right now. It's not profitable enough. And on top of that, you have the problem of the private sector, which is not bound to the law of the sea in terms of the convention, right? But their interests compose the national interest of many countries. So of course, the diplomats will be defending their foreign policy, and therefore they would be defending also their national interest, which one part of it is the private sector interest. So that is all researched under ocean science diplomacy framework. So it is, at the end of the day, all connected, because whenever you're taking science or research evidence into the negotiation of anything in the law of the sea or whatever, internet, cybersecurity, climate, you name it, it is science diplomacy. So they go very much alike, hand in hand.
Excellent. Continuing our conversation, the United Nations Decade of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development has officially started this year, 2021, and I suppose this is a great opportunity to deepen our understanding of ocean governance and make it an indispensable tool for achieving the goals of the Agenda for Sustainable Development. What is the role of the ocean science diplomacy in this? Do you see it only as a goal, or we should face the use of science to achieve sustainability as a challenge too?
That's a great answer. Thank you, Lily. And in that paper that I just mentioned, I do frame the decade as an ocean science diplomacy action in itself. because it was negotiated by diplomats with the subsidies and the evidence coming from science. So that's why it was decided to be an ocean science decade for sustainable development. It's not just ocean decade, right? So in that sense, it is an ocean science diplomacy practice in itself. Also, it was a surprise for me going through the documents from the Intergovernmental Oceanographic Commission, which is the UNESCO body entitled of running this decade, that science diplomacy is not taken as a strength or as a tool that could leverage capacities worldwide. Because one of the things that I find beauty in the science diplomacy framework is that you can actually find ways to build common grounds and bridge communities that would, in different settings, wouldn't talk to each other. So, for instance, in another recent paper that I developed together with my friend Luciana Coelho, we looked into the implementation of the transfer of marine technology and marine scientific research under the Convention on the Law of the Sea, looking at how it was implemented and how impactful the lack of implementation of it is to Latin American Caribbean countries and scientific communities there. And it is very important that we decided to frame it around science diplomacy practices, because if any of those countries were able to negotiate a provision under the convention to actually have the transfer of marine technology, it should be also an international negotiation to make it implemented and have more equity and access to marine technologies, and therefore being able to contribute to the overall global interest of understanding better the oceans for better management. So the decade in itself aims to develop the science we need for the ocean we want, but that science will have to be fed into decision-making processes, which are usually national decision-making processes under the jurisdiction of many member states. So with that regard, we need everybody involved. We need the science being developed from north to south, east to west. The only way for that to happen is actually to allow all the countries to leverage their own capacities, scientific capacities, to dwell with their own coasts and oceans and have access to infrastructure and capacity building. So they're also able to be part of it and therefore would facilitate the absorption of that knowledge into their national decision-making processes. So we have 10 years ahead. If we are to promote sustainability in the ocean, we need to understand it better. We need to lessen the scientific uncertainties we have. And we can't do that with the model that we have today. So business as usual will not solve the problem. We need to hold hands together and we need to do it as one ocean community. And the only way of doing that is actually bringing capacities up and helping and reaching out for communities, other ways of knowing and opening up to other perspectives. That's my personal belief, but it's also something that we have, as I did tell you, discussed in this paper with Luciana.
Perfect. In that regard, how to deal with different interests and cultures across the globe to promote the use of science in the process of decision-making about the ocean? Is this one of the great challenges for ocean science diplomacy? What would be the main challenges in the short and long term?
So I think that we need to embrace different interests and cultures. We need to embrace different realities and understand how the processes work. There isn't one size fits all solution. There isn't a way that we could just take one success example and apply it somewhere else. We need to understand the local realities. So for that, the challenge is actually to integrate traditional indigenous knowledge, political processes, countries that are democratic, countries that are not democratic. We need to understand how things work in their own realities so we can actually propose. The best way to do it is to involve locals. So we need local researchers to be leaders of research projects in their own fields, in their own countries. And we need to do that in a big network that would then have the participation of researchers from hard and social and humanities. We would have the participation of health, economy, and many other disciplines that are not working together today. But that's very difficult to achieve because people are very used on working on their little boxes. And I myself have been raised as a biologist, turned into a bureaucrat, and now coming back to academia as a social scientist, I can tell you, I wouldn't recommend anyone of doing that because it's really difficult for you to change your mindset and try to absorb a different way you're thinking. But we can ask, we can be humble enough to ask people how to do it, better ways to do it. And there's only one way of doing that, as is building this big community. So I do believe that one of the strengths of the decade will be ocean literacy movement that aims exactly on that, raising a new ocean citizenship so we can understand together what works for me, what works for you, what are my values, what are your beliefs, and how we can compromise together on making an ocean more sustainable. So the main challenges for the ocean science diplomacy actually will be not to be closed into an academic field or not to be closed as another subfield of international relations, political sciences, whatever. It needs to be the one that actually brings more people together. So it needs to be open. It needs to be accessible. We need to be communicating better. So that's for me the main challenges that we have on the long and short term. But none of that will be possible without funding schemes, access to technology, and so on and so forth. So that means that we need to understand how far we can go for the sake of profit, how far we can go with the consumism behaviors that we have today. So we need to bring this up as main factors for our subsistence in this planet.
Awesome. Today you talked about ocean science diplomacy, its creation and evolution, its importance for the law of the sea and for achieving sustainability, and the impact of using science for ocean decision making and ocean governance, in addition to the main challenge related to the theme. Thank you so much, Mr. Polejak. It was an honor to have you with us.
Well, I thank you, and I hope that we can actually start looking at other fields from academia, from social work, and political decision-making as well, and we can embrace a bigger community. We can truly become an ocean citizenship for the next decade. And I'm available if anyone wants to reach out. It's easy to find me. So thank you very much, Lily, and thank you to the IBDMAR for this opportunity.
This was the 23rd episode of Almar, the official podcast of the Brazilian Institute for the Law of the Sea. Thank you for listening to us. Almar is available on all streaming platforms. Like and share with friends to receive the main information about the Law of the Sea. See you next time.